Buenas.
It sounds so empty.
Uh-huh.
We are missing two posers today, everybody. So let me get you in. Let's do the intro. Welcome back to Film Posers for Bodiquas, ranting, raving, and reviewing cinema. Today, it is just two Bodiquas. Two posers. So, Gabriela and I
are going
to be...
For those of you concerned, Juan and Ana are alive and well. They're not dead.
Yes, the phone posers aren't breaking up.
We're okay. Everything is so fine.
Yeah, Gabriela and I had the opportunity and the honor of covering New York Film Festival as New Yorkans.
New Yorkans,
if you may. And yes, we attended the New York Film Festival in person. If you didn't know, we're living in New York now, so
we are roommates.
Yeah. Oh my god. And they were roommates. Juan and Ana unfortunately could not come, so yeah, we're just gonna be talking about the festival, what we watched. We more or less watched 8 to 10 films each, and yeah, let's just dive right into it. I'm going to let you start. So basically, just to give a little gist as to the dynamic of the episode, so makes it a little bit easier to follow, we're just going to chit-chat. We're just going to talk about the films that we watched. We're not going to go into too much detail, specifically with, just going to mention it now, Tragedy of Macbeth and Dune. We have two reviews going up on our YouTube channel, so please be on the lookout for that. So if we don't go too in-depth here, it's because of that. So don't worry, we will talk about those films a little bit more, but yes, chit chat away.
I think we should start by talking a bit about our experience.
Yes,
because other than watching the films, we also had the opportunity to attend press conferences and meet a lot of really cool people. And overall, yeah, just the whole attending a festival in person, like in my case, this is my first film festival that I've gone to in person.
Yeah.
So obviously it's very different than just sitting in my room with my computer pressing play on films. You know, I got to meet people, talk to fellow film critics. So I really like that about this festival. And my highlight, I will be talking about this until the day I die. I will be telling this story until I die. Chelsea is already like, oh my god. So as part of New York Film Festival in general, they offer a lot of talks with, you know, directors, actors, creatives behind the films that are at the festival, or just, you know, filmmakers that are in town. And those are open to the public. You don't have to be attending the festival to go to these talks. And one of those talks was with Jane Campion and Sofia Coppola. And if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you know how much I love Sofia Coppola and how much her work means to me. I showed up 4 hours early because there were only 75 spots, so I was not going to miss this. And I got to go to the talk first, front row, and got to hear Sofia Coppola and Jane Campion talk. And it was just incredible to listen to two of my favorite filmmakers talk. And I just can't help but love it as they mentioned how much they both dislike doing coverage. And it was just so funny to hear, you know, these such established directors talk about it. You know, the process behind, because the talk was focused on Jane and her new film, The Power of the Dog. So how they made that film because that film was in the middle of being made when COVID happened. And so she talked about how they managed to finish it despite the delays. And it was just a really inspiring talk and so cool. And after that, I met them both. I have never cried so much in my life than I did after talking to Sofia Coppola, meeting her and telling her how much her work means to me. I have never cried so much. I don't have the words. I still can't believe that happened. I have my picture, but I don't believe that happened. But yeah, that's the highlight of me. This, other than the films that I watched just meeting them both was incredible.
Yes, this was not my first in-person festival, but it was my first New York festival in person, and it was delightful. I will say one thing that has stayed with me is that I'm a little sad that there were some films I missed because I didn't know they were going to be at the festival, because you're so used to press screenings, including, especially if it's in person, you would assume that more films would be available to the press. So surprising to see, to like hear of some films like The Lost Daughter were playing at the festival.
Oh my God.
And I'm just so used to, again, to the press screenings, just including certain films. And to then hear from someone else that it was playing there and me checking and they were sold out. And then they started, like, they opened more tickets up and it sold out in less than like 5 seconds. And I was like, God, why? Yeah. Why do you do this? So I missed The Lost Daughter and that makes me very sad.
Yeah.
I also missed Belle, which also makes me sad. But the films we were able to...
I missed The Power of the Dog.
Yeah, but that was available to press. Eso son otro 20.
I know, I missed it for being responsible.
Gabriel, it's not the same thing.
I know, but I'm still sad.
But overall, good experience, despite it being, like, the screens being pretty early, at least most of the ones that I was interested in, it was fine. We were able to get there. Another thing I would like to add that, along the lines of things that could have been better, is that a lot of the employees that were, the volunteers that were working the festival and everything, weren't getting just treatment and they were asking for more, and we don't really know what that left on, but again, they were just doing their jobs and so many people were getting upset with them because there was such limited seating for the press screenings and everything. It's like, please, future festival goers, don't take it out on the people working the festival. It's not their fault.
Yeah, for sure. It was all, yeah, the employees at Film at Lincoln Center in general are, you know, arguing for better wages and better treatment, and we here support them fully. They're just doing their jobs. If there's no space, no more space, then there's no more space. There's nothing that they can do.
Yeah, of course it's gonna be frustrating, but yeah, again, it is a privilege to be there. It is an opportunity to be there. That seat does not belong to you, you know, all the gist of that. But yeah, especially another thing that people were pointing out is that I wish there had been, because most of the Q&As were led by men for the press conferences.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to see more women leading conversations, because, you know, I think we make for good interviewers, but that's just me. And yeah, at least there were men of color, so hooray for that. Overall, the press conferences were nice. I was able to attend a couple, and we were able to, like, post pictures on the Film Posers Twitter account. So if you haven't seen them, they're there. And we were able to meet a couple of people, like Benedict Cumberbatch, Tilda Swinton, Penelope Cruz, and Pedro Almodóvar. So just a lot of very well-known people just standing there a couple of feet from us. So that was incredible. And also, like, shout out. We were able to also meet up with a lot of people from Twitter, like Billy Melissa, Matt Nelia, Cole and Justin from the Oscar Expert account, and Randy Jones was there too, and just a bunch of people from the onlines that were in person. It was like, wow, we're real people. This is crazy.
Yeah, it was so weird to see people that I've only interacted with on Twitter in person. Yeah. Like, oh my God, like, you're real.
You're three-dimensional. You're not just on my screen.
Yeah. That was also a highlight, getting to meet, you know, everyone that was there. Even including Karsten from YouTube.
Yes. Karsten was great. Had a little chit-chat after Dune. That was wonderful.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I think the best part of New York Film Festival is the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, it was. And also, Josie and I found our spot where we would sit at after screening.
Yeah, we had our spot. We had the green steps at Lincoln Center. Spectacular. Great. I felt like a main character more than I usually do, so it was wonderful.
Yeah, that Starbucks at Lincoln Center came through. Had me caffeinated. And
yeah, I think that's a good summary to it. Unfortunately, I don't think we have that much chisme, bochinche for you guys.
No.
it was just a good experience, good people, good films, and yeah, I think we can get into said films.
And yes, before that, support the Lincoln Center workers. They deserve better wages and they deserve better treatment, and we here stand by them.
Yeah.
So yes, and be nice to them.
At least I'm going to be talking about the films I watched ranked.
Yeah, me too. I think that's a good way to...
Okay, I'm going to let you start because I know you're not going to like my least favorite film of the festival choice.
So I got to watch a total of 10 films at New York Film Festival, which is very nice considering everything else that I was doing. And so my least favorite of the festival should surprise no one, but here we are. And it is The French Dispatch, directed by Wes Anderson.
I'm leaving.
If you've listened to our Wes Anderson episode, then you know that me and Wes Anderson just don't get along.
Yeah, I remember telling her, like, I don't know why you're going to watch it. Sure, she wanted to give it another chance. I'm like, you're not going to like it. I told you it's the most Wes Anderson film. Yeah. And she still went. And what did she do? Talk smack.
Yeah, because I wanted to give him another chance. You know, you never know, right?
I knew.
Okay, you knew. But I was excited. I stood in and I was like, yeah, maybe this will be the film that makes me like Wes Anderson. For the first 30 minutes, I was really liking it. I was having fun. And then it just kept going. And it kept going. And it kept going and it didn't end. And I realized that, no, this is not it. This is just overwhelming, but nothing is happening at the same time. That's not to say that it's not well made, because the one thing I do like about Wes Anderson is the production design. The technical aspect of his films are always so well done, especially the production design of The French Dispatch is exquisite. Like, I'm not gonna talk smack about that, because that was beautiful. The colors, the sets, that was all beautiful. It's just the script. Yeah. But I did like the performances, especially Benicio del Toro. He was great. And I know Josie really liked The French Dispatch. That was my least favorite of the festival. I'm sure that if you're a big fan of his, you'll love this film.
Yeah, because it's a film that embodies everything that he's done up to now. And it just, hopefully to me, it felt like, hey, this is everything. This is how far I've come. This is where I am now. And in the future, hopefully we'll see something new, because it definitely felt experimental. Even though it felt unique and typical of his style, it still felt like he was taking risks. So I'm excited to see where he's gonna go.
Yeah, I did like how it did feel like you were reading a newspaper.
Yeah, it's literally the visual embodiment of journalism.
I like that a lot. Josie, what was your least favorite of the festival?
People are going to be surprised. I remember telling people at the festival, other critics, like, yeah, I did not vibe with this film. And they're like, oh my God, that was my favorite. And I'm like, I'm so sorry for you. Not in that way. I just feel bad because people are loving it. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I just didn't. And it's a good film. It's a good film, but it just was not for me. And that is The Power of the Dog by Jane Campion. And it follows charismatic rancher Phil Burbank, who inspires fear and awe in those around him. When his brother brings home a new wife and her son, Phil torments them until he finds himself exposed to the possibility of love. And this film is gay. And it is based on the novel of the same name. And, of course, it stars Benedict Cumberbatch, Kirsten Dunst, Jesse Plemons, Cody Smith-McPhee. Wonderful cast. Wonderful people. They were at the press conference. I will never live that press conference down. I will not say why. I will never forget that press conference. No, I will not divulge the details. But maybe that's why I feel some type of way about this film. But in terms of The Power of the Dog itself, my notes were hilarious. Because literally one of them was like, is it gay? And then it was like, it is gay. Yeah, so it's just a film about people losing themselves to the pressure or the intimidation of those around them. And it is a very intense film. It is very well shot. It is very well lit. Beautiful score. Wonderful production design. It is startling. It is nerve-wracking and kind of anxiety-inducing. As much as it is beautiful, I think my favorite shots were when Benedict Cumberbatch was by himself in nature, because oftentimes he felt like a predator in his natural habitat, but then like he will lower his guard and it just looks so nice, especially the parts you could see the like him shedding the layers, like it was so symbolic. And I really enjoyed how Campion dealt with that, because it was very interesting to see this toxic figure look so relaxed and at ease and just shed away all of that toxic masculinity that society was forcing him to exude. I think it can all be said, like, again, it is a good film. Clearly, I do admire it. I respect it. But my main thing is that I was expecting more, but it everything was very well managed and well done. I mean, after you see something like D10, which is one of the most original films in the past 20 years, you're like, go, do something, do a flip. And then it's like, it felt like a very tame film that I felt like Campion was holding back a bit, just a bit. And I wish she would have taken a bigger risk with the style and the way she decided to tell this story. Either way, there is no doubt why people are liking it.
Well, I have not seen it yet. I don't know what I wanted to say. I'll probably like this film. I really like Jane Campion. And yeah, so my next film is none other than Red Rocket, directed by Sean Baker.
Yeah, we were both able to see this one.
I'm not saying this film is bad. It's just very unexpected. And we were not ready for it. Yeah, a little controversial. Yeah, a little?
Yeah, I just remember one of my friends being like, I don't think you'll like this film, but maybe you will. It does have a touch of pedophilia. And I was like, this person's always joking. They're messing with me. No, they weren't. And I'll leave it at that, because nope. This is a film you should definitely go in blind.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it.
Just a little warning. It does touch on the topic and you decide how it handles it.
So I really love Florida Project. That film remains my favorite of Sean Baker's. But this one is completely different in how you're not supposed to feel empathy for the characters, because it does deal with horrible people. So it's kind of rough to like feel bad for someone who's a horrible person. So you're going in this wild ride of these people, and part of you is just like hoping that they get caught in what they're doing. But at the same time, you can't help but wonder how they'll get away with it. Very well-made film. I love how Sean Baker manages to create such beautiful imagery and such beautiful shots, despite dealing with horrible people and horrible topics. Like, he made Texas look so pretty.
Yeah, he made the industrial sector look beautiful. And it's like, how, sir?
Yeah.
Yeah, it just deals a lot with your environment. So a little bit of nature versus nurture in there. And, I mean, there's a lot to unpack here. It was well made. It was well shot. Has spectacular acting. It's just down to the story.
Yeah, the acting was great.
It was definitely, I think a lot of people are going to be pushing for, or at least hoping for, Simon Rex to get a nomination for this. And I think he might have a chance now that the Globes are happening. But he was great, because I really hated his character, because he's not supposed to be a good guy. You're not supposed to like his character. I was laughing a lot, surprisingly.
It's very funny.
Yeah, but again, it is that story, so it's not going to be for everyone, but
yeah, I think it will find its audience, but also when it, once it's released, it's going to be a lot. Film Twitter is a lot. Again, watch it, form your own opinion. Just be wary of what it deals with.
As for me, of course, Power of the Dog was my number 8. Red Rocko was my number 6. And between those was Memoria.
Wow. Oh, wow. You ranked it low.
Yeah.
I'm
because,
surprised.
Yeah, so Memoria is about a Scottish orchid farmer visiting her ill sister in Bogota, Colombia, who befriends a young musician and a French archaeologist in charge of monitoring a century-long construction project to tunnel through the Andes mountain range. Each night, she is bothered by increasingly loud bangs, which prevent her from getting any sleep. I read the synopsis after watching the film, and I was like, wow, so that's what the film is about? Because I did not get that at all. Like, the film is various shots, various moments, a narrative structure that is told separately. It is basically spaces in between the lines. That is the film. The film is the spaces in between the lines. It feels like one long trip. Se siente como un viaje. It's the film that will never stop being in theaters now because that's a thing. Mm-hmm. And Tilda Swinton was great. I thought performance was great. The comedic moments, like there were surprisingly some, a few comedic moments that felt so natural, which I appreciated because they kept us invested. That's the most I could say. I wish it had been a little bit more intimate. I definitely felt like a stranger on the outside looking in. And it definitely feels like a film you need to sit with a lot. But I do admire what was being done. My only pet peeve is that I think I ranked it so low because this was being promoted to me as a Colombian film. And I know it wasn't a Colombian film, but considering Colombia it has decided to push it for Best International Feature as their official selection, I wanted more. And you can definitely, because they were commenting at the press conference that they approached this film as outsiders. They wanted to get that outsider feel, and it was perfect for them because they had never been to Colombia. So being there benefited the mood and the atmosphere they wanted to get in the film, which was great. But I really wish it had been a little bit more intimate, especially with Colombia and its history and its culture and its people. And I know that wasn't supposed to be the point of it, but again, if Colombia is submitting this for international feature, I wish it had a little bit more of that emotional attachment. So that's my big if. And also, it's not the fault of the film. I ranked it low because we just saw so much good food.
I actually ranked it number 6 because while I do agree with what Josie said, it's a trip. It's an experience to see this film. And despite everything, I was never bored. I was invested. I was so curious about what was going on because the only thing I knew about Memoria was about the noise, that it was about this woman who hears a noise. That was all I knew. And so we hear this noise and it's scary. a few people like were shook. And I remember telling Josie, this is worse than a horror film, because at least in a horror film, you can feel when the jump scare is going to come. But in here, the noise just comes out of nowhere and without, you know, you don't see it coming.
That being said, please don't go into this expecting a horror film. It is not.
Yeah, it's not. It's not a horror film. Yeah, I don't want to say a lot because this is a film that you should experience. But again, the release plan that they made for this film is absurd. I don't know what's going to happen with this film. I think it's a bad move to just have this film be in theaters forever. It's ridiculous. Like, I understand that it's an that it's a cinematic experience.
So like, what are your next films?
So the next film I have is Parallel Mothers, directed by Pedro Almodóvar. So I have not seen that many Pedro Almodóvar films, but I have seen a few. And it was good, but I don't know. It really didn't blow me away or really mark me like some of his other films have. It's good. Penelope Cruz is great. The story is very interesting. But I don't know. It just really didn't land for me.
Yeah, this is my number 5, and it was actually my first Pedro Almodóvar film, if you don't count The Human Voice, which is his 2020 short that I do believe is still available on HBO Max. I hope so. If I'm wrong, I'm so sorry for getting your hopes up. But so technically, this is my first Pedro Almodóvar film, and I was very mixed watching it, but I really did like the end. I loved that final shot, and a lot of people were talking about it at the press conference because, as per Almodóvar's words, this is his most political film yet. He was very explicit with his intentions and what he wanted to criticize, so that I found that at least very admirable, even though, of course, the history between Puerto Rico and Spain.
El colonizador.
The colonizers, as we say. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yeah, criticize your government. Go off.
It's good, but just not my favorite one of his.
I ranked in number 5, and all I'll say is good performances. Especially, I thought, if you go into this, please be on the lookout for Milena Smith, because I thought she was able to hold her own very well opposite Penelope Cruz. And the best part of the film is their relationship. So if you watch it, please be on the lookout for that. And now we'd like to take a moment to talk to you about our sponsor, Anchor, the easiest way to make a podcast. Now, my next film, my number 4, we're getting into the good stuff, was The Worst Person in the World, which I missed at Cannes, but I have risen. It is my time. And it just follows the chronicles of 4 years in the life of Julie, a young woman who navigates the troubled waters of her love life and struggles to find her career path, leading her to take a realistic look at who she really is. Some people have been calling this a rom-com. I do believe it's kind of like an anti-rom-com in a way, but it does play with the rom-com tropes and everything, but it is very different. I loved it. It is quite long, but you don't feel it. But just a warning, it is a little bit long. And just good performances, good storytelling. It surprisingly tugs at your heartstrings all throughout. And I found myself crying. And I didn't realize I was crying until like the credits rolled. And I was like, why are my cheeks wet?
Yeah, same. This is actually my number 5. I loved this film. And yes, it's long, but I didn't feel it at all. I was invested. I felt like I was going in a journey with Julie.
Yeah.
I think that it's a film that I feel that a lot of people are going to be able to relate to.
There's so much to it that is so relatable. Yeah. It's a good film. It's good
great.
Soup.
It's good soup. It's great. So it will be released by Neon soon, so be on the lookout.
That's my number 4. And then my number 3 is Dune, which, again, won't be going into details because we're going to be doing a longer review.
Yeah.
So more in-depth thoughts and opinions will be going on the YouTube channel. Yes. But yeah, I liked it. I do agree with some criticisms towards it, but other than that, film good. Go watch.
After my 4th film that I watched is The Souvenir Part 2, which just want to point out that it happened. It finally happened. I watched The Souvenir Part 2. I love how with these movies, I watch them for the first time and it's like, damn. And then they stay with me, and the more time passes, the more I love them. And it's the same thing, the same case with the second one. I haven't stopped thinking about it. Love it so much. I think I love it more than the first one. So for those of you who don't know, The Souvenir Part 2 follows the aftermath of The Souvenir, which if you haven't seen, I'm not going to spoil, but it's this long emotional journey trying to, you know, heal from the events of the first film. And is also based on a true story from Joanna Hogg. This was something that happened to her. So her making these films are like a catalyst, and they are helping her heal from this. And again, they're not for everyone. They're very slow burn. The topic of toxic relationships, again, it's something that's very difficult for some people to handle. So I understand when a lot of people don't like them or can't watch them. But I love these films. But overall, it did not disappoint. I loved it. And I like that it has more rewatchability factors than the first one. Because the first one is just a really rough watch and I don't see myself ever revisiting it.
So, my number two, my second favorite film of New York Film Festival is Come On, Come On by Mike Mills. Which, honestly, I've been so tempted to make it my number one, but I will not betray Macbeth. Which, spoiler alert, Macbeth is my number one.
You won't pull a Banquo? A Macduff?
No. Not. But wow, is Come On, Come On so second, like so close. It is so close. It is, again, directed by Mike Mills, and it is a documentary filmmaker played by Joaquin Phoenix, whose latest project involves gifted children bonds with his smart yet sensitive nephew, whose father struggles with bipolar disorder and is in the grips of a manic episode. And then his nephew is played by Woody Norman, and you also have Gabby Hoffman in this film, and then Scoop McNairy. They're great. Also, Jabuki Yong-Wai is in this film, and I like immediately came up and I was like, hey! And nobody, and everyone was so quiet. I was like, oh, sorry. But this film is one of the best. I mean, it has a 4-star rating on Letterboxd. Come on. It is one of the best films in the past decade and even more. I can't shut up about this film. It just feels so lively. I was crying already in the first 5 minutes, which I know I cry a lot, but people, please, seriously, it is good. Take my word for it, please. Wow. It is heartfelt. It is humorous. Again, it got me crying 5 minutes in. It is a fleeting capture of life, and there is meaning and purpose in every scene, and it's just so tender, and I think we can all agree it's just such a tender film. Performances were great, and honestly, Woody Norman held his own, and he acted so well opposite Joaquin Phoenix, and they were at the same level at performance-wise. They were just that, like, he was that good. They were both so good. Joaquin Phoenix is able to make you feel so many emotions in just the span of a second, and I love this film. I love this film so much, and I've been tempted to make it one of my Letterboxd top four, so I'll leave it at that.
I did not watch Come On, Come On, sadly. But I'm excited to after hearing Josie's very passionate reaction about it and comparing it to Uptown Girls.
I just have a lot of feelings.
I want to watch it.
Choose your fighter. Uptown Girls or Come On, Come On. Like, the posters look similar. I'm just saying.
Yes. My number three is Dune. I went to church that day. Let me tell you. But like Josie said, we will have a full review on the film on our YouTube channel. So I won't say much other than I loved it and it is a cinematic masterpiece. Yes, and Oscar Isaac Hernandez Estrada. So my number two, I feel like it's a tie. One, they're both ranked equally. I literally cannot choose between them. But since in Letterboxd you can't put them both in the number one spot, you gotta have a number two, Macbeth, which we also have a review coming up on it.
Wait, what?
Wait till you hear my number
one. Wait, of course. Yeah, okay, entiendo.
Mm. Okay.
I didn't watch that one here. I watched it at Cannes, so.
I know.
Yeah, if not, it would have been my number one.
Yeah. So Macbeth, again, we have a review coming up, but
yes, that I have to edit, it. So be on the lookout for that. Yes,
I loved it. Another cinematic masterpiece.
Amen.
Good soup. Good soup. The English majors were thriving. We were the annoying English majors in that screening.
A24 is made for the English majors.
Yes.
I will take nothing against it.
Yes. Before I reveal my number one, Josie. Do you want to elaborate more on your number one before I reveal mine?
It's Macbeth. I mean, good soup. It was good production, good acting. Of course, we're probably going to see some nominations there. If you don't see a production design nomination, I quit.
I will fight.
It is the epitome of production design. Come on. It blends theater with cinema. Like, it perfectly brings the theater experience into the big screen without compromising it. So for that, I just think it's an admirable piece. It is a little bit hard to swallow for people, but more of that in our review. I recommend it.
Yes. My number one pick from the festival is none other than France's official submission for Best International Feature for the 2022 Oscars, the Palme d'Or winner, Julia Ducournau's Titane. I cried in this film. At the end, I was shaking and I was crying. What a fucking masterpiece. Film is insane. It's incredible. I have no idea how this film can be so fucked up but so wholesome at the same time. It has so many layers, like an onion. I was telling Josie this morning, this film is an onion. There's so much to unpack in. And at the end of the day, and it ends up being a story about found family, and it makes you happy. But then you remember the circumstances under how all of this is happening, and then you wonder, what is wrong with me? Why am I rooting for these people? But at the same time, you're like, aw, look at them. It's so much. Ka-chow.
Thank you. I just remember, so for people that don't know, when I was watching it at Cannes, yes, I'm going to keep saying that because I didn't think this would be my life, but here I am. I was just sitting at Cannes and we're just there hanging out, just a bunch of film critics just sitting in a row watching a film about an unstable woman going through the trials of life and pregnancy and motherhood and just being a woman in society, you know, just girly things. And I just lean over to, again, my film talk co-host and I just go, good job. And I just leaned back against my seat again. So, yes.
It's a masterpiece. And I am so happy that France submitted it for the Oscars because that's what they needed to do.
Incredible. If they didn't, it was going to be a horrible decision. They have. I know that it's not the most comfortable film for everyone that will probably be voting during the next award season. But it is a daring film. And I think it's been getting the recognition it has for a reason. And I think that it is a film that sits with you and there's a lot to admire. I do think it's groundbreaking in some sense. And it is one of the most original pieces we've seen in a while. And it is the reason why we make films and why we like watching films. So, smart decision. And this is to make up for not submitting Portrait of a Lady on Fire.
Amen. And we will be running Titane's Oscar campaign.
Yes, we will. We want Best Director and Best Picture.
Yes.
Come on, Neon. You did it once. Let's do it again.
Because this film is just incredible. It's something you need to witness. Because, oh my God.
I think, yeah, that's all for New York Film Festival. It was,
yes.
It was like 3 weeks. But it went
felt like longer.
It went by really quickly, but it also felt like more. Overall, good time, good people, yeah. Good films. What more can we ask for?
Good food.
Good food. So, that's actually all for today's episode. We'd like to thank you for listening and to give a shout out to all the kind people sending love our way. If you'd like to keep up with us, make sure to follow us at Film Posers on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook. Also, make sure to follow our individual Letterboxd accounts. We usually make lists on the films we watch at the festival. So if there's anything more you'd like to know about these films, please head on over. They will be right there. And our thoughts and opinions will be adjacent.
Yes.
So where can they find you, Gabriela?
So you can find me on Twitter at Gabby_Burgos27 and on Letterboxd at Gabby Cristina.
And you can find me at The Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd. Again, thank you for listening. And remember, we're all film posers. Bye.
Bye.